You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The episode you're about to listen to was recorded way back in February when we were living in a very different world. However, the conversation we have with Lisa Gaida at the time is super pertinent to where we are now. We hope you'll enjoy our conversation with Lisa Gaida and the follow-up 7 months later.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. And today we have basically a legend in our industry.
Legend, an icon.
She is. She's shaking her head as I'm saying this. But it's so true. She's been in 18 Broadway shows. Yes, you heard that correctly. 18.
Just a few.
Just a couple. She's been the recipient of the Legacy Robe 6 times, I believe.
Wow.
She doesn't even know. Too many times to keep track of. Both Jessica and I have worked with her, and we can attest to the fact that she is one of the most genuine people you'll ever meet. She's funny as hell. Mm-hmm. And she also has one of the most interesting journeys to motherhood.
She is Broadway's Lisa Gaida. Hey, girl.
Hey.
She really is Broadway's Lisa Gaida. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I mean, basically, if you've been on Broadway from like 2001 to 2016-ish,
or yeah, the
90s, you probably have worked with her because yeah, she's been in every show.
Yeah. 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 If you're under the age of 30, then you might just now be finding out her name. But sorry for you.
But thank you so much for being here, Lisa.
I am so happy to just see you.
I know.
This is great. We do see a lot of our friends this way. It's like, oh my gosh, it's nice to see you. Forget about that drink we always say we're going to have, because that never happens.
We end up having like a therapy session here, but that works too. Tell us about your kids.
Okay, so I have a 6-year-old named Luca and an 18-month-old named Ava, who we've had, who have been sick for 10 days and who I couldn't wait to get away from. Like, I can't even tell. And I am like, really, you'll find that I am very into motherhood. But yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Peace out. I got things to do.
That's the truth bomb right there. To go.
Yes. Yes.
This time of year is just brutal.
Oh my God. This winter has been awful. Yeah. It's been awful.
Even though the weather hasn't been that bad.
No, like, but the sickness. Well,
the weather's been amazing. But like my kids don't get sick very frequently because we're dirty hippies and we have all the microbes. But this past 10 days.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Glad you're here. We'll keep you a little extra. How's that?
Yeah. I did a 7-hour podcast, family.
I'm so sorry. I don't know where the time went. We ask a lot of our guests if they always knew they wanted to become a mother. Obviously, you were in the industry for a really long time, and that's something that it's just not super prevalent. We asked Lauren Lataro, who was, you know, in the biz around the same
time she said,
you know, she would see people get pregnant or have, you know, leave to start a family and not come back.
Mm-hmm.
So was it something that you thought you would do?
No. In fact, I always called myself the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang because not only didn't I want kids, but I hated them like the child catcher. And I hated families, and I'd see a family and I'd feel genuinely sad for them that they were a family.
Look how the tide has turned.
You know, and like the, so no, I was like vehemently against having children. I never had the slightest biological inclination well into my 40s. And I was also, I had a very special relationship to my career. I mean, I've talked about this on Broadway Baby Mamas. I gave you guys a shout, like those of you who had children anywhere near the middle of your career, or even some of you toward the beginning, are absolute superstars to me. It's like such an affirmation of what you believe you deserve and what you can have and what you're capable of navigating, because my generation had a little, we just didn't believe that that was a possibility. And I prioritized my career over everything, every other aspect of what I could possibly be. Mm-hmm. So all those other parts were muted out. That's how you do 18 Broadway shows. You mute everything else.
Well, and I mean, but that's something to say, like your generation is just before, that's not it's this, not we're not that talking that long ago.
I know.
Like how things have changed and the outlook, you know? I mean, this was what, your first Broadway show was in
74.
No, shut up.
It was 95.
I was going to say in the 90s. Yeah. So it's like, isn't that something that just in the last, you know,
I'd say 5 years, 5 to 10 years, even.
I mean,
even.
It's only for been, sure. Yeah.
Like
for
7 years. Sure. I mean, so yeah, it is a tremendous development. It's mm-hmm. a tremendous development for people's well-being in the business, because it's like, it's affirming that you're more than this thing. It also creates, I see how much navigating it requires. I'm not saying it's like a rainbow, but it moves us all like in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I'm so genuinely impressed with it that you are all able to go, this is really important to me, and I am also other things. Mm.
But funnily enough, as you're saying that, I'm thinking to myself that I always knew I wanted to become a mom. That was something I always knew. And I also knew I wanted to keep doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I gave enough attention to how hard it was going to be. Do you know what I mean? I think mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'm going to have a baby and then I'm going to come back to the show I was in. I was doing mm-hmm. Jersey Boys. I'm going to come back and it's going to be fine and life's just going to move on. I think that there's having people see that it's possible is so important, but also talking about how hard it is.
Yeah. Well, and
is
I
so important.
Well, and I think that like our generation, we grew up with parents who were constantly telling us you can be, you know what I mean? I think your parents are probably just a little ahead of mine.
They didn't tell me anything.
Exactly. Good job. No, but it's like, you know, the generation before, you know, your parents didn't probably say that it came through in the 80s, right? Where it started to be like, you can be anything and
everything
you want to be.
All
yes,
of that
exactly.
Talk. It's tricky.
So for sure, Kara, of course we were like, and Kara and I being type A people that we are, we're like, I'm going to do it.
I'm going to be on Broadway. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. And my God, is it hard. I mean, of course, also you can't tell people nothing before they go through it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, like, that's what I was thinking as you guys were talking too, is like a part of me is like, well, it's a good thing you didn't really consider it fully. And the other thing, the thing that I'm thinking of too, as I listen to you talk, is that both things are rare in that, like when you're a parent, it asks you to blind out it could cause you to blind out every other aspect of who you are. And Broadway asks the same thing mm-hmm. and asks the same question. Mm-hmm. So it requires a tremendous amount of psychological, consciousness and dexterity to manage those really, really, but it can also prove both wrong.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
You know, and mm-hmm. it's like, and it's not perfect, but it's also not perfect to be like, you know, what I was doing when I was only doing Broadway. I mean, I don't want to put it down, because it was really right for me. In fact, I needed that much time. Like I always talk about, like, I'm going on all these interviews for my new career. All these interviews. I went on an interview. I'm a liar. Liar. I lie and I don't know I'm lying till I've done. So anyway, I went on an interview. Well, the reason I say all these interviews is because my mind has been taught, like processing all these questions. Yeah. So I feel like I've been on them, but I'm still a liar. So I talk about my career like it was a career, but it was also a place for me very, very, very specifically that I worked things out. for my life. Like I worked on, like I started with like 12,000 demons and danced with all of them through decades. And so I needed that much time.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready to even consider the vulnerability of having a family or picking up person I could count on the way I could count on my husband. Was not ready for that until I was older. So it's not like Broadway exclusively kept me from these choices.
It's part of your journey to getting there.
It was part of my journey. So I don't mean to put it down. It was, but it is not as happy as a more balanced life, you know? Mm-hmm. So even though it's very difficult to balance it, I think that it's a better choice than being not living like more pieces of yourself at once, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Well, since you kind of touched on it, let's get into it. Yeah. So Lisa is a part of our Journey to Motherhood series where we talk to different women about how they become mothers. There are so many different ways to become a mom. And your path is unlike many I've heard mm-hmm. of. And let's talk about it. So totally. you found your husband, Brian, who's amazing, everybody.
Yeah, he's great.
He's great. So at that point, when did you know you wanted to have children?
So I met Brian when I was 39, still like couldn't fathom not being a dancer and having that be the center of everything. We got married when I was 41, he was 42. So not really in the childbearing, already moving out of the childbearing zone. And then I saw a videotape was sent to me. My sister had just had my nephew Leo, and I saw this videotape of him being bathed, thank God. And like a switch went off, like something, like literally like a light got flicked on. And what's ironic, you'll hear, it's why it's, I also use ironic. I have no idea what it really means. But maybe ironic is that it was maybe because he was genetically connected to me. He looked like my face. He looked very familiar, like in my bones, he was familiar. So I said to my husband, who'd always wanted a family, because he's Howard Cunningham and a good and fine man and very traditional. I said, do you want to have a baby? And he was like, yeah.
Oh my God. Well, wait, can we go just pause? Because you said your husband had always wanted to have a family, but you had never felt that pull. So was that an issue for you guys to work out when you were deciding to be together?
Probably should have been a bigger issue than it was. I mean, he did one time, I remember I was sitting on our terrace and he came out and he was almost angry, probably because now that I'm becoming a therapist, I realize he was probably sad. And he was like, I think it's really sad that we're not having a family. And, you know, and we talked about it for a second. I don't know what I did, but I was just like so clear. I was like, honey, but like, no,
right. You know,
no way, no way. And then, of course not bi. It's not that simple, but basically it just seems so, I was like, this is not like a negotiation for me. And for whatever reason, he tolerated that. And then cut to like, I had kids and I was like, can we have 50?
Oh my God.
Like, I turned out to be like really into it.
Wow. Okay. So cool. Thanks for.
Yeah.
All right. So now you go to him and you say,
so would you like to have children? And so we sort of went because of my age. I was well into my 41st year being on the planet. And we sort of went right into the fertility route because we just were like, let's just see where we are. Mm-hmm. And I had like a low, my ovaries are older than I am. So I was 41, but my doctor said they were kind of older than me because I have like a fatigue disease or something. Mm-hmm. I do. So, and it attacks my ovaries and my thyroid. Oh. So
did you know about that before?
I knew I had a fatigue disease. I didn't realize it would affect my fertility. Yeah. And I, you know, I remember, I never care. Like when I used to suffer from migraines, it was related to my period and my uterus and all that. And I was like, just take it out. I don't need it. Mm-hmm. So I was never concerned about any. So then what wound up happening is we kind of immediately, like 6 months into sort of like trying the old fashioned way, started thinking about, I had a friend who had her child, she was pregnant via egg donation. And to me, genes were never, because I never had a fantasy of having children, I had absolutely no attachment to, I never saw in my mind pictures of my kids looking like me or never thought my genes were like a gold mine, like gotta have them. So I brought it to, I also, adoption was very comfortable for me. My husband is more traditional and he wanted to have a closer, you know, he wanted to have as close to biological children. And what's interesting about egg donation is that for some people, this is very important. I think that, and this can be Googled, so if I'm wrong, then just find out. But I think that the carrying mother, so I am considered 50% the biological mother of my children because they're made out of me. Mm. And so the genes are provided by my donor and my body makes the baby. So they're like, when they look at pictures of my ancestors, they are made out of that stuff. Yeah. In case that's important to people. It is not particularly important to me, but, you know,
that's
some people, yeah, that is interesting. So we very easily, I mean, that part of the journey was very easy. I didn't have to mourn much. I wanted a baby. I didn't care how I got the baby. And we picked a donor fairly easily at first, like it felt like shopping. And then, cause we were looking at videos and like profiles, like on a dating site. And then like one morning I literally sat in front of my computer and my husband let me drive it. Cause I guess she's representing the egg. and I was like, can I curse?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just need a fucking baby.
Yeah.
And I like picked somebody who I liked. I didn't care like what her grades were, or they were all gorgeous. That made that easy, you know? I liked her. She was irreverent and funny, and I liked, she felt like home energetically. Mm. And so I picked her, and her face is in my house, and her hands are in my house, and her butt is in my house. So it's a good thing. I'm so glad.
You had to like her.
I'm glad, you know, you're always going to love you. It doesn't matter. Like right. It just does not matter. So, you know, but before you become a mom, I think it's, at least before I became a mom, you think that your kids are coming for you, and then you realize that you're here to facilitate whatever they are. So it doesn't matter what they are. You just facilitate it. And some things are easier than others. Some aspects of them are easier for certain personalities than others. But anyway, so that's how we began our journey. And I got pregnant on the first try with Luca. And wow. And my pregnancy was the worst year of my life.
Oh my God. Your journey. Oh. Like you guys on Lisa's Facebook. I mean, it's another world. You should do a book just really of should. Your journey, because it was
when you were something. In it, were you like, oh my God, what have I done?
There was one
eye on the prize.
Like I almost like, of course it was Brian's fault because that's what husbands are for. I was like, you know, when you made me do this, there was one night, but I wanted him. Like, that's the funny thing. Like the moment we started, I wanted him, you know, like, and I wanted him like on a biological bone level. And I was a mother, you know, like some people, everyone is different. Like I have friends, I won't name names because I don't know if they want this information, but I have friends that are like, oh my God, like when I'm pregnant, like it's like, I don't have any connection whatsoever. Like they don't become a mother or a parent until they see the kid. And sometimes that even takes time. So everyone's journey is different. I had like a really strong thing. So, you know, it was the worst year of my life. And I was so sick, so fundamental. I had every symptom pregnancy has to offer. And I was ugly and I was horrible looking and it was dreadful. I thought I might like it. I actually thought I was gonna like, people like talk about feeling sexy or, you know, feeling euphoric. Anyway, so did not have that kind of chemical experience. And my second pregnancy was pretty miserable too, except that I opted into a lot more medicating because I needed to parent my son. Yeah. So, you know, whatever the doctor allowed, I was like, give it to me because I need to care for him. Yeah. And I was working too full time. I was working from home.
Wow. And it's, you'd been down the road, you know, you're like, well, I had that experience. So now just give me what I need to get through this. Because was it very similar in the same?
It was a lot better because my doctors, we all knew a little, there was a drug available that hadn't been available for nausea when I was pregnant with Luca. And she had mercy on me, my Ava. She had a little bit more mercy on me. And I just medicated the hell out of myself. I had migraine. You know, I got my Botox for migraines. I get bad migraines. So I didn't want Botox. But it's perfectly legal. It's like perfectly acceptable, like medically. Mm-hmm. My doctor kept saying it is perfectly safe to get Botox. But I was worried. And then the second time I was like, I just got to take care of my kids. So I'm just going to down all these meds.
Right.
So
give me the drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
You said you were working full time. I think that this is a good segue. I mean, we're going to continue to talk about motherhood too, but
yeah.
Talking about transitioning from being on Broadway. Mm-hmm. So you, when you became a mom, you decided that was it? You had already said you were done, or was it? No, because you were in Tuck after you
had Luca. I was pregnant with Luca, and I remember sitting across from Sarah Ogilvie being like, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to like not audition, you know, because I was like, it really felt, I was 44 and I didn't know anything about life without being a dancer. Like I didn't know that since I was five, like it was my destiny from a young age, and I didn't know anything about life that wasn't about that. So I just like, am I going to pull on those sky blue hot pants after this? It's going to be so sad, but I think I'm going to do it. And so sure enough, I had Luca, and I went on two auditions, and one was for On the Town, and it had like 5,000 triple pirouettes into layouts. And I was like in an A-line, like I was in like a house coat.
Oh my God.
And I remember going to the audition feeling very confused about how to present myself, because I was like, it doesn't feel good to compete with young people, but I'm not really that character person. I don't have those skills. I'm a dancer. So like there was nowhere to go. And then I did one other audition. Both auditions felt really bizarre and not good. And so I just thought, well, then it's not that I wanted to dance anymore, but I didn't know how not to, and I didn't know who I was. So
right. That's a very real, I mean, for I think yeah, in this business, for sure, you know, because so early on we start to train a lot of us, or it becomes our life. And then that is, like you said, Broadway wants all of you, just like motherhood does. And so it's a struggle, I think, to be like, who am I without this?
It's literally starting in some ways. Now, some of us do fare a little bit better than others based on how much of ourselves we've explored outside of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think mothers, if they choose to, or anybody who's invested in other things, will have a sense, some kind of like, I did have grounding in other things, even though I had been so committed. I'd always thought, so anyway, it was not that terrible. So I was confused, but I went on those auditions very early in Luca's life, and I was hit like with a tsunami with motherhood. I had a very strong biological response to it. I was like the kind of mom that like breastfed for 8 years and like very, like very happy, and also really relieved, because depending upon what your career felt like to you. So for me, my career, I was never good enough for myself for like 30 years. Who would fucking miss that?
Right.
I did not miss that. I thought that was a huge relief. Yeah. So really, it wasn't a painful ending for me. And I was very consumed with motherhood, which we know can be consuming.
Yeah.
And I was choreographing, I was exploring that. And then I was on a law review team, you know, which was awesome. I didn't have a lot of pain around my career ending. I will have occasional coming here today, walking past theaters. I have like a nostalgia for it. And there is a tiny bit of suffering, a little bit of grief, but it's momentary, because what comes with walking through a stage door for me is like a lot of yuckiness.
Yeah.
It wasn't all yucky,
yeah.
but the yucky is kind of, I think in like 10 years when my experience has been fully integrated, you know, right now I'm just like, oh, but the part where I was so hard on myself, I don't miss it. Like, and I have to get through that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just for anybody listening, Lisa just said she was never good enough. She's been in 18 Broadway shows.
Right.
Like, even with the validation of the industry telling you over and over and over again that you were good enough, mm-hmm. you still didn't believe you are. So I think that that's a really interesting takeaway mm-hmm. as what we do in this industry
yeah.
as a whole.
Yeah.
So you went into Tuck, thanks to Casey, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so you did that while you were a mother. Was Luca like two?
Luca was two.
And how yeah. was that for you, juggling the 8-show week while he was?
It was fun. Initially, I cried. I cried the first week. It's just a change, you know? And it's like a biological change. Your body is so close. Like, my body, I was still breastfeeding him. Like, there was so much closeness physically.
Yeah.
So it was just like an adjustment the first. And of course, rehearsals are very hard from going to, you're like with your kid all the time.
Yeah.
And I did not mind that much. You know, it was, he's a very easy kid. So that also depends. Like, if you have a kid that has higher needs, you need more of a break. Like, if my kids were like this high knees, I would have 6 jobs. Right. They were like that all the time. So the first week was a giant adjustment, you know, but like anything, it's kind of like you kind of make, I enjoyed him when I had him in the morning and I enjoyed him. It was not ideal. I don't like the 8-hour day situation for myself, you know, and this is something that's very important to say all the time for myself, because I think this is just so fascinating to me how we walk through as parents, the world feeling a need to justify our experience of parenthood as like, it's tempting to sometimes try and say like, because my way is ultimately the right way, you know, and like, or
because it is the right way for you.
We are all so like, we are all so different. Like, how could somebody with my background, with my nature, with my, have the same experience with a completely different background and nature, and there's so many ways to do it. So everything I say is going to be about like my experience. So I didn't love that. I liked being in a show. I thought being in a show with a young child, I can, because I'm a dancer, like being tired sucks, but like it pales in comparison to other problems. So I, you're with your kid a lot if they're not in school, you know, if they're not school yeah. age. And then I went home in between shows because I lived close enough and I saw him a lot. And I enjoyed, you know, going to work when you're in a show, especially a Casey show. Like, everybody was like 65 and over. They were all my friends. and it was a pleasure. It was really a pleasure. I didn't, you know, I wasn't happy that Tuck closed. You know, I would have been happy to do that for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you come to the career you're at?
I think I always knew. I remember being like 20 and like being in Susie Taylor's class and like doing passes and thinking like, when I'm 40, I'll be a therapist.
Oh,
you know, like I just knew it was like the old, it was like the other thing that they are so close. It's all so close. Yeah, it's all totally. Feelings.
It's actually the one thing I think about. I like if too. I were to do something yeah. else, I would want to be a therapist.
Absolutely.
And it probably comes from like this, you know, like sitting in dressing rooms and hashing out our lives and listening to all the problems and solving them.
And it's like we think about we spend our days creating worlds and telling stories. There's a whole modality. When I say feelings, therapy is not necessarily about feelings, but it's about human experience, yeah. you know? So feelings is kind of boiling it down to something maybe, you know, but like stories, there's narrative therapy, you know, that's like a whole modality based on storytelling and how you can affect people's experience by addressing how they tell their stories
yeah.
about themselves and about the world. And it's just, there's a lot of instinct involved. It's about joining. So it's about connection. Mm. So this is all stuff that we freaking love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've always been interested just like in people. So like when I was in any show, 90% of the time I was reading some book about the brain or about psychology or about, I just think it's interesting. Mm. And I can make my own hours. I don't have to have 8-hour days, which is 10-hour days, which is right. not, which doesn't feel, right. you know, not something I want. So all of that, it's a massive investment. I mean, I had no college, not one college credit. So I started from
wow.
scratch.
Wow. That would be me.
We'd be
I
starting.
Didn't go to college yet.
Yeah. You know,
oh my God.
It would be, but, wow. but I highly recommend the LEAP program at St. Mary's. Yeah. And we can
that's
talk about why.
Margo works there.
Oh that's yeah. That's job. The one that she yeah. works at.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's phenomenal. And you get a year of credit for wow. your experience, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, wow.
It's like, and it's like group for dancers and performers. Mm. We're all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, it's like a 6.5-year at least investment 7-year investment before I actually make any real money doing it.
Oh. Where are you in the year market right now?
I did my undergrad in 3 years, and I'm in the second semester of my graduate program. So next year I start sitting down with clients as an intern. The year after that, I make a tiny bit of money while I'm gathering hours. And then if I work hard that year, the following year, I'm a therapist who gets paid for her work.
Wow. And we thought being on Broadway was hard with kids. I know. How about doing that with kids? How do you balance that?
Oh, it's nothing, because it's like, it's so clear about what it asks. Right. Like, the thing about Broadway is that you can't invest, like, it's not like I'm investing in one thing. My energy is like, all I have to do to do well at this is do it well. But when I was a performer, I had to plant 7 trillion seeds. I couldn't say no to anything. There was no boundary. Yeah, there are no boundaries. You're never, because
never
like,
say no.
You can never say no, because if you want to eat, you need to have been investing in 50 things, because you don't know which thing, and you never are right about what it's going to be. So it's got, you know, you can't be like, oh, I feel like this one's going to go, or this one's going to be great. Like, based on the creative team, or based, there's just no telling. So the thing is that the conflict about being a performer and a mother is the lack of boundary in performing. It just, there's never enough that you can invest. So this is quite easy. It's clear. I go to class, I do this, I study.
Yeah.
You know, and you could danceify it, but I'm 50, so kiss my ass. No, you could do all that other stuff, but you really don't have to succeed.
Right, right. And kind of comforting to just have that framework that you have to work within. Just,
it really suits me. I'm like, you know, I'm really very interested in this. I really care about being of use to people. I'm very, you know, all of that. But I'm not interested in like suffering for stuff anymore.
And ain't that the truth? Yeah. It is a suffering. I mean, you know, it's like, it's, you know, and these are champagne problems to a certain degree. And, you know, the Broadway, the golden cage, you know what I mean? It's like, but it is true, especially if you're, I mean, if you're lucky enough to be in a long running show, or even not necessarily a long running show, but just take a show that runs a year. That means you get 2 weeks vacation and 4 personal days. And otherwise, by family. Do you know what I mean? And it's
absolutely.
Like, so when you're in these shows, like Kara and I, Jersey Boys for like 6 years, basically. And you know, when you think about the amount of time that it asks of you, you know, it asks of you sacrifice and the energy and the time away from your family and those other parts of yourself.
Yeah.
Like you were talking.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, and when you're in a long running show, you're not just doing that. First of all, the longer the run, right, the more rehearsing there is. Right. Aren't there like put-ins and like all that. And then there's that weird thing that I was just ran into Holly Coombs, and we were talking about like the, she's a great, like a phenomenal stage manager. And we were talking about like that weird, I said, it's like so the thing I miss the least is how hard I was on myself. How I was never good. I saw like a clip of myself dancing in Tuck recently, and I was like, I just, thank God I'm never, ever, ever going to do that again. Not the dancing. It was fun doing it, but seeing it is like, nope, no thank you. I never want to have to do that again. But anyway, we were just talking about how crazy making it is to have to be in a long running show, because you are genuinely grateful. It's like that whole thing about how grateful you are and how lucky, what a champagne problem. But it's crazy making, because there's a weird kind of twisted thing that happens in longer runs. Like that's so hard on your psyche, because if you're a professional, you bring yourself to your work in a way, every single show, you really do try every show. And over time that can be absolutely nauseatingly crazy making. It takes something away that I still don't know what that thing is, but you need it.
Yeah.
But it's so refreshing to hear that you were able to walk away. Oh, like this is something I've been talking to Jessica about recently. I'm like, I'm just not.
Well, do you love it?
I do. Oh, okay. I love it. Yeah. But this kind of leads us to the next thing, and about aging in our industry and how it affects your career and what you are sometimes no longer appropriate for, or what you are appropriate for, you know, and it becomes like a real struggle in your brain to be like, where do I fit in? I still love doing this, you know?
Yes, that's tricky.
Well, and I think that, you know, as dancers or as, you know, with certain roles, at least for me, my personal experience, the bulk of my Broadway career until recently was being like, I put quotes, the hot one. You know what I mean? I was in like a hot track, you know, like the hot chorus girl, you know, Guys and Dolls and Gypsy and, you know, Jersey Boys. We were, you know, in crop tops and crap. So it's like, you know, there was that part of me. That's what I was.
Yeah.
And so now as I age, it's sort of like, who am am I now? It's a because I'm not that. Yep. I mean, I still think we look pretty fierce.
It's a version of hot. It's just a version of hot. You change your version.
Yeah, exactly. But like, there aren't that many spots for who we become.
That's right.
So then, you know.
Well, it's, you said it in this article in the Times. I have a quote from you. There was a great spot on Lisa in the Times.
You should look it up.
It's so really good. It's when she was in Tuck. She, you know, they were profiling her because you had been in 18 Broadway shows. But your candor and openness in it is what struck me. I remember I texted you as soon as I read it.
Yeah.
And you talked about the Eye of the Tiger. And at that point, I didn't think I had it anymore. And I will say the Eye of the Tiger is different for me now. Mm-hmm. Well, you were talking about saying yes to everything. Mm-hmm. I definitely do not say yes to everything, which I think being a mother has shifted my perspective on
that. That's what shifted. Let's be honest. If we hadn't had children, we probably would not have shifted that.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. Which is also super freeing, mm-hmm. right? To be like, nope, can't do that. And I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to do that because it doesn't balance with my life at this point. But you said, the last half of my career was loaded with the anxiety of having to fight, stay young, stay pretty, stay sexy. None of those things were ever me, and it just got worse. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that this is confined to our industry, but it's incredibly exaggerated in show business, this need for women to remain sexy.
And to be viable. If we're viable, then we have to be sexy to be viable.
Yeah, or beautiful or young looking or whatever
it is. A version of sexy that is specific to youth. I had a whole Facebook catastrophe based on the J-Lo Shakira halftime show.
Oh,
I actually took it down. I was like nauseous when I would
say
it.
I didn't see it.
I kept it up for a long time. Oh, and then I was like, you know what? This conversation just gives me anxiety. Mm. Like, I think it's not that I don't love having important conversations in a social media context, you know?
Yeah,
and
no,
so, but I
not.
Felt compelled, of course, you know, cause I got needs and I got an opinion. And so, but I was talking about that. I was like, you know, and it's an ongoing conversation. It's like, this goes for men and women. It's like, there's a point at which you actually, when you can't do, you could fight to do that. You could fight to still have a six pack and a gorgeous butt and everything. And God bless, I know being 50, how much energy and time that takes. Yeah. And my question is that good enough? Like, how many days do you have left? How much of that time was spent doing that? And for whom,
right.
you know? And like,
because it's probably not for you. I mean, to a certain degree.
You're hustling for somebody else's idea of what you need to be. And how much time have you been spending thinking about how you want to be? You've earned that. And the other thing is that when you can't do that anymore, you're free. And no one tells you that in this culture. And I wanted to say it out loud. And I had friends like, I'm so disappointed in you. Did it in a judgmental asshole way. But like, but basically, you know, like I don't spend a ton of, I want to be attractive, you know, but I spend as much time on it as I see fit, considering there are lots of other things that I think are more important. And so I wanted to offer, this is a culture that says you should, it is winning to hustle for that. You don't have to lose your youth. And not losing your youth is what winning is. And I just wanted to say, like, just so you know, when you start to fail at that, you might find that you're free. And you might find that you start deciding a bunch of stuff you are waiting other people to tell you. You know, there's tremendous power on the other side of that role. That role is very confining for men and women. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're beautiful and glamorous and you're expending a lot of energy doing it and putting, there's nothing wrong. I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying that is like the act of that, the dynamic is you're asking the world, what do you think?
Right.
Well, and
you're
then
looking for
when
validation from everyone else.
The whole point is, what do you think?
Yeah.
And that's fine. There's a time for that, actually. You know, you want to do that. I had a great time walking down the street, spending my energy, hoping people liked what they saw. Mm-hmm. But there is something tremendous when you set that down. Mm-hmm. Tremendous power. I'm not, you start.
What if you're just sort of like leaning over with it? You know what I mean?
What do you mean? Talk to me.
No, I mean, that's true. I would be remiss to say if I didn't say that, like, I still have a large part of that.
You're in,
you
know, show business.
Yeah,
you have to.
So it's like, but at the same time, I do feel as I've become a mother and as we've had this podcast, to be honest, and started speaking out more, and as I approach a new decade, I do feel myself being like, fuck it. If you don't like it, like, this is who I am. Like, yeah. I can't spend that much time worrying about it. But at the same time, there's this other part of me in the back of my head that's like, but I still want to make sure that you think that I'm, you know, all those things.
I mean, but that can be part of that. But that can be, you know, first of all, I said in that article, it was never me. It's a very easy thing for me to set down. It was a terrible fit from the first second. I got into those pretty girl shows by the skin of my goddamn teeth. And it was awful.
Again, 18 people, 18,
18 shows yes, by the skin of my teeth.
Hardly.
And, but not all of them were pretty girl shows. But it depends on how much of that has been working for, it's harder to sit down something that works.
And you don't necessarily, it's not that I want to still be, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's like, do I still
How
want to
you?
Have to try to fit? I'm 39.
Honey. I'm 75.
No, but that was, and I just, on my last birthday, I put it out there that I was 39. And I actually
Good
said this
you.
To my husband the other day. And I was like, I wrote that. And still, as I approach 40, like this year, it's that moment of like, oh my God, but then I'm not, what does that mean? And it's hard to admit that, but at the same, and I can see that that's a thing, but then like to get through that. So I, like I said, I'm starting to put it down. I'm not quite, I haven't said it.
That's amazing. You know, you do you like at your pace and like by no means am I, obviously. I mean, I'm like the worst person you know, for real. Like no one's self-actualized. We're all like, we could all sort of talk about like the things that are harder for us to set down. And I think that it's kind to ask ourselves to do our best and take as good care of ourselves as we can in all the ways that we're trying to move forward. Mm-hmm. But like, that's tremendous being in show. When I was in show business, and you know me, like I'm quote unquote like Miss Outspoken, telling the truth, which is not, you've seen me lie right in this interview, but like it was not easy for me to openly state my age when I was in show business. That is anxiety producing, and I that's mean, not you still, being crazy, that's you being aware of the reality. Mm-hmm. And so
but you want it to not be the reality, right?
So like you want it to be the normalcy,
like just like motherhood, like as we speak about having our children and being mothers, and we say in the room, you know, if we go into the room and Tara Rubin says, "How's Elliot?" you know, and ask about my daughter, and the creatives are hearing that, and it's like owning it, you know, that
right.
I am a mother and I am of an age.
Yeah.
You know, I remember a director saying to me a couple years ago, and, you know, Elliot was maybe two, she was two and a half. And they were saying, the person said to me, he was a man, and he said, there are only so many. And he said, "I've paired you with so-and-so as your," he's like, and I think he's your peer. He's like, I don't want to know how old you are.
Yeah.
He said,
he said that. I don't want to know how old you are. Meanwhile, he has known me and hired me for 10 years at that point.
I know who he is.
Yes. I know. I'm sure you do. I'm sure it doesn't take a lot to figure it out, but he had known me for 10 years at that point. And I want to be like, even if I had been 20 when you met me, I would only be 30, but I would be 30.
Yeah.
So clearly I'm in my 30s. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that shouldn't be a bad thing.
That's
right. You know what I mean?
Like,
and there is something freeing about coming to that place where you are no longer that chorus girl. There is something freeing about that. Oh. I have enjoyed sort of getting to that place and like seeing, I remember going to an audition for Company, which isn't great, but I remember going to an audition for Company at like the Berkshires or something a couple of summers ago, and looking around at everyone who was waiting for the callback and being like, oh, this is where I am now.
Yeah.
All right,
I remember that. Yeah.
Cool. You know what I mean? I was like, this is where I am.
Yeah.
You know? And there is something freeing about that, but it's reconciling that with the old, with all the voices from
the business is the business. It's an agreement. You know, the agreement, at least when I was in it, and I do see it changing, thank God, and it will continue to change. But the business, that when you sign your name on the dotted line, you're agreeing to a version of being a woman. Mm-hmm. That's the agreement.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's until that changes, I suspect it will. I mean, just watching how everything is changing, like now, how people are thinking and talking about things, what characters are like in movies, and in shows, like we've grown and will continue to grow. Broadway is a little slower, but you're not, you know, owning it is powerful, and I see why you're reticent, because the agreement is that a woman is a certain thing, and that thing couldn't be further away from powerful as far as I'm concerned, generally.
Yeah. But it also can be, I think, freeing to, I mean, I'm not saying I have made complete peace with it, because I haven't. I still have that desire to be sexy and pretty and all of those things. But like my recent experience in the prom, I was in the adult cast.
Yeah.
So I was in a show with kids who were very, very young.
Yes.
And their role was energy and cuteness and you know, and I played a PTA mom. I mean, I was playing who I am in real life in a lot of ways. And that was incredibly freeing. But it was also like, I just remember being on stage while they're all doing this big dance number at the prom, and I'm like standing in the back clapping, and I'm like, I don't know who this person
is. Yeah, yeah,
like,
sure.
I don't know who this person on stage
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right.
Because I was always, you know,
that one.
So it's an interesting journey to go on. But then by like month two into the run, you're like,
this is awesome.
The best thing that ever happened to me. But it was also lovely to be in a room or in a theater with young people and be able to kind of share that older,
yeah,
I'm going to say wiser. I don't know if I'm wiser,
you are.
But experience of mm-hmm. having been there, modeling that I'm a mother and I have two children and I'm still
huge.
Doing this. Mm-hmm. One of our cast members just recently announced that she's pregnant. She was one of the kid cast.
Yeah.
And she said just being able to see somebody do it in real life made me think it was possible.
That's huge. So that's so huge.
There are different ways in which I think the industry, it shifts for you, but it is a hard pill to swallow.
This is the first time I'm really feeling a shift. Like as I, you know what I mean? Like this is the first time where I'm really, I remember when Jersey Boys closed, I was like, who am I? Because when I started Jersey Boys, I was 29. And when it closed, I was 36. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten married.
Yeah.
And I had a child. And I was like,
a lot of change.
Who am I? The last time I was auditioning and like really hustling, I was in my 20s. So that was like a whole new thing.
Well, this is such a gift that first of all, I want to clarify, it was powerless. I think it's a not powerful role to be a chorus girl. It's not always a powerless role to be a woman in show business.
Yes.
Standing in a bevel, being pretty for people felt to me very powerless, probably because it's just very far away from who I am. Mm. If you're glamorous and that's exciting and that's creative expression for you, maybe you might feel differently. That's first. I want to clarify that so I don't have to call you and tell you to cut that out. And then secondly, I want to offer that our business is such a gift in so many ways because... So like I was talking before about how our culture tells you never have to let go of youth. Our culture, I remember I was doing pre-production, speaking to this change that you're talking about and how you were on stage feeling change. And like, we're so confused by, like, we're a culture that promises based on the idea, I think, of consumerism, mm-hmm. that we don't have to let things go. You know, you just get to keep everything you want and it's a culture built on that. And so we're so confused when it comes to transitions. We don't have a culture that respects and has like containers for transition, you know, like, so we have less and less rituals and all that stuff that helps us make sense and normalize experiences. So I was doing Tuck pre-production. I loved pre-production because I wasn't about being good. It was about being a part of creating. It was just so delicious. And I didn't have like my weird critic in the room. And I loved it. And I loved Tuck. And I loved the earthiness. I loved being in bare feet. And I loved the music. And I loved all of it. And I loved being in the room with Casey. So I remember I went to therapy after that. And I was like, I was kind of okay with, I hadn't done my IVF, my DE, donor egg IVF yet. And I went to therapy and I was like, I love it. And he, my therapist, Lair, and I sort of talked about it. And ultimately he was like, and we discussed the idea that we have to say goodbye to things we love in this life. Yeah. You know, that's real. It's okay. You can, just because you love it doesn't mean you have to keep it or that you get to keep it. And so to create a space, and our business sort of gives us these opportunities because there's so much transition and so much change as you go. Like, we've been different in this business 10, 15 times. This is mm-hmm. the one, it starts to get realer
right.
as you get older. Right. But we've been transitioning and experiencing different parts of ourselves all along the way. And so it's just such a helpful realization. It's like there are parents whose children die. Like, this is a life, this is a world where we don't get to keep something just because we love it. And I thought that kind of normalized my feelings around like not like, you know, having to let something go that I don't want to let go. So even if you don't want to let it go, it doesn't mean that you can't. Mm. And it doesn't mean that it's wrong to, but it also doesn't mean if you really don't want. So like basically, Kara, for you, you were talking about how you're not, you love it. Then the only question for you is how much does it hurt to stay? If it hurts too right. much to stay, mm-hmm. then you go. But if you love it,
mm-hmm. that's good.
You know, then, yeah. then you stay and you have respect for, you know, you have respect for the fact that you love something and want to do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that's a really healthy choice.
Yeah.
The only time I think it becomes like unhealthy is when it's feeling terrible and you don't know how to say goodbye. And that's not even unhealthy. That just means it's time to figure out a way to have this process occur mm-hmm. of grieving. you know, because for me, my grieving happened a lot while I was in the business. And while I was in the business for like 10, because when I was 10, I was like, so mom, I'm going to be 20 in 10 years and I'm going to die.
Like everything was about, like, I always was forward thinking, just like you can see a little trauma there in my early years. So I'm like,
so basically, you know, I always knew it was ending. So like when I was 30, right. I started processing it because I knew I was mostly a dancer, not really an actor or a singer as much. And so I remember going around consciously grieving and trying to understand what it is that, so like, this is so long, just cut me out. But like, I remember going to a theater toward the end of my career, one of my last shows, and dropping something off and walking into the theater as the audience was leaving and seeing this set on stage and going backstage and just feeling like, I don't know how I'm ever going to let this go. And then I said to myself, well, what is this? This is belonging. Mm-hmm. So everything that we're attached to is something that's like a basic human need that can be met probably better elsewhere.
Oh my God. But that you nailed it, belonging, this belonging. Community, the Broadway mm-hmm. community.
Oh
and
my
that,
God.
That feeling you have when you walk into the theater. That theater, you're mm-hmm. like, this is my place.
These are my people. This is my tribe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, I've talked about that before. It's not on this podcast though, but you know, I grew up, my parents did community theater and, some of my, I feel safest in a dark theater.
Yeah, like, totally.
I can remember, it makes me emotional, but like, I can remember being a kid and like laying on a pallet in the back of the house in the dark and hearing their voices as they rehearsed,
totally,
you know?
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know where else to be.
Totally.
Do you
hear
me?
You.
It's
oh
like
my
such
God,
a
I know.
Biological, visceral connection. And
how lucky are we that we know that, first
it's
of all?
It's wild, right?
Like
it's
laying wild. There and looking at the, I remember laying backstage and looking up at the lights and all the stuff being hung and being home,
totally.
Like fundamentally home.
Totally.
Yeah. You know? So yeah. And then our process is how do we, you know, is it possible to have full respect for how much we love that mm-hmm. and see, you know, I guess the question is, what does it cost me to hang on if it's costing me something, if it's not costing me anything, or if it's not costing me too much? Because things cost. Having children costs you and everything costs you, you know? But like, yeah, I totally, that resonates with me in my bones. And the beauty of that, we are so lucky. I mean, and the beauty is it doesn't have to happen on Broadway. You're not talking about Broadway, right?
No.
You're talking about community theater. Yeah. What a beautiful thing. Yeah. And the other thing too is that belonging, that theater is there for us though.
Yeah.
That's what I learned is like the most important things, the things that are truly specific to dancing and singing and theater, those things are there. Mm-hmm. Those aren't only on Broadway.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then like the deep basic things, like the belonging I found like, oh, well, and that's real, the belonging you're describing, and it's gorgeous. And I wish everyone on the planet that feeling because that is so special, the feeling of weird safety and stuff.
Yeah.
But then also too, like putting my roots in like shows that would run 6 weeks,
right.
finding your belonging in such an unstable, like if Rob Ashford doesn't like your outfit, belonging is not available to you. So it's a tricky place to put your belonging roots too. So it's like a mixed bag.
The simpler time, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God. I love that like we came to this table to like ask Lisa about her experience
I know.
And she's giving, and you're basically giving us therapy. Which is
and myself. No, it's like, so, I want to have, when I become a therapist, I want to have a dancer group and I want to do like, or performers group. I want to like, I just want, there's such a knowing that we have with each other.
Yeah.
And it's just, and I just love us. We're the worst, best people. We're the neediest, postiest, shittiest,
we really
grossest,
are.
Best people.
But you
people.
Know, there's such a shorthand, right? Like we
there
just
is.
Know when you get into a room with performers, with actors, with creatives, you just know what the convo is. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know,
exactly.
The shorthand. I mean, and even more so, I mean, when you have that belonging, I mean, I talk about this with our Jersey girls. It's like, we know the names of our parents. We know our family so well. Like,
I mean,
when
intimate,
you share a room for years and years, I mean, even just a year.
Siblings,
I mean,
nephews, nieces, like,
we
know all
everyone,
of it.
And we've seen them grow up, and there's a shorthand and a comfort there.
Absolutely.
And that's why when you get together with certain people, it's just like, oh, I don't have to like bullshit. I
that's
don't have
right.
to like go through, oh, well, my mother, she's blah, 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 or whatever. I love you, mom. But like, you know, we don't have to like, you don't have to describe anything. I can just call Kara and be like, Sarah Rush said this or whatever, you know what I mean?
And
she knows exactly, she
thing.
Gets it, like all of it. And that's what That's what our community is.
And you guys, it's a culture, because when you leave it, like, I've left it and, like, wait until you hang out with muggles for years. Like, wait, just wait. It's like, I was telling somebody, like, I feel like I have to contain like 95% of who I am so as not to just completely drown them with myself. My And also, too, I was watching this thing on Tyler Peck last night. Like, I'm dirtier, I'm weirder, I'm bigger, I'm sloppier, I'm sloppy in every way than regular people. Like, Tyler Peck ate every one of her meals in this documentary on the floor next to her feet. And I was like, I'm like, that looks a little disgusting to me. But now I understand, like, because I've moved further and further away from being it. Right. Like, in sweaty clothes that she's been wearing.
But of course, in the middle of rehearsal, for anybody listening to this who doesn't have that experience, you know, you're sweaty, you have to eat. You're putting your food on a plate on the floor.
We are not precious people.
We are not precious.
And I fucking love us. And I don't want to be near anyone else. I want to be near you and you and you. I don't want to be near anyone else. I mean, there are a few special people that still have that energy, but ultimately, like, what we are, even beyond this sort of, like, there, you know, as you were talking about Jersey Boys, I'm thinking about, like, we have all these boundaries that are taken down by the nature of the gig, like the nudity, like, just by being naked with people in robes.
I said this to my husband just the other day. I was like, isn't it something how you meet a group of people and you don't know many of them? Like, I just started at Tina. I only knew a handful of people. And all of a sudden, within 6 weeks, 4 weeks. Yeah. No, 6 weeks with I mean, but 4 weeks or so, you are getting naked.
That's right.
With each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they see your, although I did work with someone, there's one person who I've never seen her naked because of the way she changes.
Weirdo.
I know. It's crazy. But I never did. 2 years on tour and I never saw her naked. But otherwise, you just, like, take off your clothes.
Here's my goods. Or if you're a dancer, like, God, I mean, speaking of Rob Ashford, first day of rehearsal for Wedding Singer, we did...
I told the story.
A lift that was
involved penetration.
Was familiarly called Aer Lingus, because we were in a straddle in our partner's face.
Oh yeah.
So, like, first day of rehearsal, okay, pop up in the air, your partner's face is in your crotch.
Yeah. Hygiene necessary.
Hygiene. Like, literally, oh my God.
And you don't even
fingers crossed
an eye because you're like, yes, I'll do whatever you want me to do.
Of course.
But
intimacy is, like, there's just, you know, also change nudity. Like, when I was in Moving Out, I was changing, like, changing with cute boys, like, hanging over.
Now, let's,
like,
be honest, most of them aren't straight. So,
no, they were all heterosexual.
Well, I'm Moving Out, I guess.
Moving Out, because, like, for whatever reason. Yeah. So, like, there I am, like, hanging over my costume. My boobs are, like, skinny and long, hanging over my costume in front of, like, five adorable people. But they're just the boundaries. Like, you know, it's why I think one of the reasons why there's so much, there are many reasons, layers, but the just on a surface level, infidelity, because the all the safety mechanisms in place out in the regular world are necessary. Like, your kissing, your eye contact, your pheromones, your hug, like, the amount of contact is, that alone is really highly unusual.
And add in the emotions and, like, the storytelling.
All of that, the availability, the intimacy is insane. So it's really, it's a special, like, walking down Midtown, like, walking down the street in Midtown, like, seeing your vagina, seeing your vagina, seeing your vagina, seeing your vagina. That's unusual at work.
Right. It's not normal.
Nope. It's not us in porn.
That's it. Oh, us in porn. There's
that's the name of our memoir, our group memoir.
Exactly.
Edited book.
Oh my God.
Lisa,
you should come back and talk some more.
I mean,
for sure. We could go on and on and on. But I think we've said all the things.
Haven't we?
I think there's more to say.
Always.
We could just keep going.
Having you on the show, your perspective is so interesting. Your sense of humor about it is so entertaining, but so on point. Like, the way you can articulate what it is that we go through in this industry is really powerful, and I think people will be interested to hear it.
We'll see. I'm insufferable. Likely the latter.
Well, thank you for suffering with us.
Yes. No, I love seeing you. Thank you for talking with me.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you so much.
Mama's talking now. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dory Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.